Hey, what up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and you are listening to All Ball. All basketball, all the time. If you're a ball guy, you know this to be true. Just because a guy makes shots does not mean he played well. I coach AAU basketball, and trying to convince a parent that a kid who hit three or four threes didn't actually play well is, well, one of the hardest things you're ever going to do, right? Like, man, this kind of feels useless. Why am I doing this? But it's true. And I think the same is true for Zion Williamson. Doesn't mean he played terribly, but if you watched his debut as an NBA player, boy, he didn't look like he was in great shape, right? I mean, he just didn't. Just didn't move all that well. He did not look like he was in the world's greatest shape on earth. And because of it, people have sort of lost their mind here, where it's this bipolar. You're either he looks terrible or you're crazy. Look at the 17 points scored in the fourth quarter, the 13 consecutive points. That's how he played. Both are true. Look, I'm a huge Zion fan. I think he'd be great, just as they played him. Small ball five. They want a death lineup. There's your small ball five. He's going to have to get better rebounding, going to get more active defensively, going to get in better shape. He made four wide open. They dared him to shoot threes to see what he's got. That's what the Spurs did first time they saw him. And they still end up winning the game. But I think that as long as you're reasonable about what he is, you're gonna enjoy the Zion Williamson revolution, if you will. He's a more athletic Draymond Green, much more athletic, better offensive. We'll see if he's as good defensively as Draymond Green. But what's important to remember or to think about is the only questions about Zion really weren't his jump shot. That's going to develop over time. It was, can he play at that weight and not get hurt? And three times he's played and gotten hurt at his previous weight, and he didn't look like he had trimmed down all that much, and he didn't have great physical conditioning, which, you know, you get in a game, you get super excited, you lose your first win, but the second win, I would have thought would have been better, but it just wasn't. So I think it's a good fit for that team because Brandon Ingram's their star. Lonzo Ball and Drew Holiday are both guys that love to pass the ball. I do think work ethic-wise, you can get a lot from J.J. Redick, and they can hide J.J. playing with Zion in that everybody can switch except for J.J. Redick. Like, I think there's a pretty good plan there. But I also think that I'm cautiously pessimistic that they're not going to demand he gets into great shape before he continues playing, because I wouldn't have let him on the court unless he was down substantially weight-wise. And he looked fairly cut, but not as trim as I would have liked. And if the Pelicans really are invested in the long term, then long term, he's got to play at less weight. Period. Stop. End of story. All right, let me give you my take on the Kansas State brawl. For the record, I've known a ton about this rivalry because my late father used to coach at Kansas State. And when they play in Lawrence back in the day, this is back in the 60s, there was a big banner that said, welcome Silo Tech. So this is a long and bitter rivalry. I don't think it's the end of days in terms of a brawl. It was ugly because there were punches actually thrown. And Sylvia D'Souza seems to be an idiot, right? Like, I don't hold it against him, all the other stuff that went on in terms of, you know, keeping him from being eligible and playing throughout his career. It's not like you have to pay some extra penance more than a suspension for a year for, you know, people around you taking money for you to allegedly go to Kansas or to wear Adidas shoes. I don't know. But I do think, like, look, he's dribbling the ball. There is no unwritten rule about letting a guy dribble out the clock. You know, I know Bill Self has been big on don't pull a D move. You know, don't, if uncontested, don't go in and dunk the basketball. You know, just dribble it out, or he could have chinned the basketball. But you got it stolen. Then you block the shot. You're going to win the game. That's enough. Standing over a kid, that's going to start a fight. And in this case, it actually did. And then D'Souza picks up the chair, which everybody freaks out about. Thankfully, Snacks, his assistant coach, was there to take the chair out of his hands. He didn't swing the chair, so he shouldn't get penalized for swinging the chair. He was an idiot who stood over a guy after blocking a shot because he stole the ball with him with the game about to expire. I don't hold any of his past, you know, in terms of his recruitment against him. Not even a little bit. Don't care. I don't think it looks good for the sport, but I got this text from a buddy the other day and I thought it was hilarious. He said, I'm really enjoying watching Kansas go from the picture of what a basketball program should be to some sort of degeneration where now they're the ultimate rebel program, right? FBI investigation, player suspension, NCAA potential violations. You know, then you have Snoop Dogg and stripper poles at the late night show into a brawl after beating Kansas State. Like, all of this is, it's like a college basketball movie cliche, one cliche after the other. What's interesting is I'm not sure how much it hurts Kansas because they've been a team playing two big guys, and for the next two games, they won't have two of those bigs. And I think their guards might actually be better. This will show their versatility. This will help them kind of try and figure out and decide who they in fact are. But Kansas going from every year they win a Big 12 title to what is the next Kansas issue that's going to pop up is quite a 180, something we have not seen from KU's program in a long time.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Evan, let's start at the Hoop Hall, which is in Springfield, Massachusetts. You went there. Ton of players, but obviously the people that guys are paying most attention to is Sierra Canyon. First, what's the Sierra Canyon thing like now? We've kind of all seen them on TV. They've had some other made-for-TV events. What was the arena like when they were in the building?
Honestly, Doug, it was pretty crazy. There's only been a couple instances that I've seen in high school basketball that would even be comparable. I mean, I've been going to the Hoop Hall for, I don't know, 10 to 12 years. I don't remember it ever selling out in advance. It was standing room only. It was pretty wild in there. You know, I think, you know, I went to a Sierra Canyon game back in the fall at their home gym. And, you know, LeBron just kind of strolled in and sat in his chair and nobody bothered him. Well, there he basically had his own roped off area. When he walked in, the whole place stood up and went nuts. You know, it was just a little bit of a different scene. But, I mean, they're legitimately like it's like Kentucky going on the road, honestly, with the fanfare that they bring, and you know, the little kids surrounding the court screaming at Bronny, and you know, actually the kid that hit Bronny with the orange peel, you know, before the game, I kind of remember him because it happened right behind me.
Yeah.
You know, they were up against the table screaming his name and trying to get his attention. It's a wild deal.
Yeah, why would he throw in an orange peel? I don't really understand that one. How'd Bronny play?
You know what? He didn't in the second game. I don't believe he scored. But I think what people got to realize is, like, the team that he's on is
loaded.
One, it's absurd.
Yeah.
You get two potential top 10 players in Boston, and Brandon Boston is going to Kentucky, and Zaire Williams. But I've been really impressed with Bronny. I've probably seen him, I don't know, five or six times this year, but I saw him a couple times in the summer. And he's got a really impressive feel for the game. His vision and passing, I think, are pretty impressive. He handles the ball pretty well, and I think he's going to be a pretty good shooter. So I think there's a lot to like about his game, but I think we also got to keep in mind he's 14, 15 years old.
Yeah.
And he's playing on this traveling all-star team against really good competition. So, you know, when you look at a box score and you see he had 0 points, it's really not that concerning because he's really young.
Yeah, I just wonder if this is the best setup for him. I guess he'll evolve into their best player, you know, when he's a junior and a senior. I do wonder if you know, he should have gone to a crossroads and gotten a chance to be the guy and to improve that way. Although in this way, he's got to be more a facilitator because they're surrounding talent. All right,
no,
go ahead.
100%. Well,
that's very fair. I mean, this is, you know, I think the thing that's the most impressive about him is just how the outside influences,
yeah,
in terms of the fans,
yeah,
and the attention. It just doesn't seem that he's very unfazed by it. Like, he doesn't make eye contact with anybody in the crowd. He doesn't seem to bother him. It's just extremely unique.
You also obviously cover the Big East for us at Fox, as well as all of college basketball, all of college basketball recruiting for 24/7. How surprised are you by the Seton Hall team that now is suddenly healthy and looks like they're the best team in the league?
Well, this is the team that we thought I think coming in, it would be them or Villanova. And obviously they've had their ups and downs, and you know, there were some injury issues, and I think they seem to be on the good side of that, and they're starting to click. I mean, obviously, the emergence of Romero Gill and from a defensive standpoint has been really helpful. In fact, I actually thought Ike Obiagu was going to be that guy, and it's been Gill. But, look, they've got maybe the best player in the country in Miles Powell, and he's playing at an elite level, and he's surrounded by really good players that buy into their role. So I don't think it's all that shocking. I mean, this is a really good basketball team that appears to be going in a great direction at just the right time of the year.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And now they got Sandro back, and you know, now they're it feels like they haven't, sometimes you add a guy and it can screw things up. It feels like they added a guy and it's addition by addition.
Yeah, and I think part of that is there's a familiarity with the guys on that team. A lot of those guys have been playing together for a long time. And, I think when you've got a guy like Powell, mm-hmm. and then these other guys that are just so willing to just buy in and be a star in their role, it's really effective. And they're playing great basketball.
All right. Nova also seems to have hit their stride. Do you think, you know, even though, you know, so many of their players are underclassmen, Sadiq Bey seemed to kind of come into his own a little bit here, as well as, you know, you still have Jeremiah Robinson Earl, who's playing well. They're just a younger team, but they are Nova with that great culture. In your mind, who's the better team in March, Seton Hall or Nova?
Ooh, that's a great question. I would say that Seton Hall is probably the better team, but I think Villanova may have the better top to bottom talent.
Mm-hmm.
So that's tough. But, you know, I think it's interesting because Jeremiah Robinson Earl is really starting to play well. You know, he had 12 points, 14 rebounds against Butler. Sadiq Bey has really come on this year. You know, outside of Marcus Zagorowski, maybe he's the breakout player in the league. And you're right, that youth, those guys are starting to become more sophomores than they were freshmen. So I would say that Villanova probably has more upside, because I think they have more talent, but I think that Seton Hall team is better right now.
It's a league where we started by thinking, oh my gosh, you know, if your worst team is Georgetown, or if your worst team is, you know, pick, you know, DePaul, like DePaul's win at Iowa, but now kind of DePaul has fallen back into their old DePaul ways, right? St. John's looks like a team with a first-year head coach. You know, Georgetown's at 2-5 in the league. Obviously, they've had, you know, massive departures. You have Xavier who you know, they returned their best players, but their best players weren't good enough last year, don't appear to be good enough this year. Did we kind of oversell this league a little bit?
Well, I think I get where you're going with this, and I think that there's some validity in what you're saying. I think the excitement around the league and the praise the league has received is more of that there are no nights off. And, you know, I agree with what you said about DePaul, but look, they very well could have beat Villanova at Villanova. I think DePaul, from a pure talent standpoint, is top three or four in the league.
Right. None of those guys have ever won in the Big East, right? So when push comes to shove, they're so used to losing, right? And look, your point's valid with St. John's, right? Could have beaten Butler. They were blown out, by Georgetown, but, you know, their Providence, that game was close. The Seton Hall game was close. But I think it's that... go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was just going to say, you know, I agree with what you're saying, and I understand with what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, they're probably still going to get seven teams in.
Really?
Probably six, seven. I would say that they have
Nova, Seton Hall, Creighton... Butler, that's four.
Butler.
I mean, I get, and then who else? You know, Providence is a hard one because you have some bad losses and some good wins. They've lost three out of the last four. But they lost
Marquette and Xavier, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends. There's just a lot of league play left. I think, I guess my point was the league was built up as a very tough league because there are no nights off.
Yeah.
I don't know that it has the top end talent. I guess Seton Hall and Villanova are headed.
I think it's the opposite. I think it's become the opposite of what that was. Maybe my point. I think Seton Hall and Nova are really good, and I think Creighton. Yep. Creighton's one of those teams where if they're Balak's making shots, they have they're kind of offensive based. I know they're better defensively, but. But you have two teams that you could see making a Sweet 16, maybe further. I think Butler's better than their results recently. I would even put those three. And then after that, you got Creighton, and that's kind of, Marquette's a little disappointing. And then there's a drop-off. And I'm surprised based upon how well the league did out of conference, especially teams like DePaul, but now water seems to have found its level.
Right. Do you think Big Ten's better?
Probably in terms of overall volume of quality teams, maybe not at the top, right?
Right.
I guess Michigan State's the best team in the Big Ten, but, are they better than Nova or Seton Hall? I'd say probably not.
Right.
So, yeah, maybe in terms of volume of teams, I think the Big 12 is just okay. The ACC, which is so maligned, is still just, it's good at the top, but just okay. I'm with you.
Yeah, it's not a great league, I guess.
No, it's fascinating, but it is a good league. And I'd validate your point that these games are super, super close. There don't appear to be anyone who's shut it down so far, but we're only in January. All right. Last thing, the biggest recruiting news of this moment is what in college basketball?
Who's going to go pro and who's going to go to college,
right.
I think is probably a pretty big topic. The McDonald's All-American rosters are about to come out. That's a pretty big topic.
Who's going to go pro is fascinating, right? Because you have, from one of the reasons college basketball is down, Kenny Martin's kid wasn't a top 10 kid, but he goes to IMG, right? You lose two to Australia. You lose one who's training all year. And then, Wiseman comes in, plays for a minute, then he's gone. Cole Anthony comes in, plays for a minute, he's gone. So you're looking around and you're like, okay, of the top 25 incoming freshmen, nine of them aren't playing college basketball right now. Of course, the incoming talent's not going to be as good.
Yep, for sure. Especially when you mix that in with guys leaving early and that stuff. But yeah, I would say that's probably the biggest from like a recruiting news standpoint. Like Jalen Suggs, he committed to Gonzaga. Mm-hmm. I think there's a very good chance that he decides to go pro. Jalen Green actually pulled aside a group of reporters at Hoop Hall this weekend, me included, and was like, look, I've been hearing all this stuff about me going pro, and I'll be honest with you, Doug, it's exactly what I've expected him to do. And he said, well, look, I'm going to college, which was a surprise. We'll see how that plays out. I think that there's other guys, Isaiah Todd's been rumored to potentially go pro, but he's already committed to Michigan. There's just some outlook for some of these teams that their commitments to would change if those guys end up going to school. But I, from a news standpoint, that's the biggest topic. From a big picture standpoint, I would say that Bronny James and Amani Bates are probably the two biggest things in high school hoops.
Awesome stuff, Evan. Thanks so much for joining us on the pod.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me, man.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
All right, let's welcome him in. We can call him Boy Genius, Boy Wonder, or just call him Charlie Wadler. He's a student at the University of Wisconsin. And tell me if I'm wrong now, okay? The last basketball game, technically like real basketball game, like I know you can play in summer leagues and intramurals or whatever. Didn't you hit the game winner to win the championship? Was that the last basketball game you played?
Yes, that was one of the last basketball games I played. In the CIF championship my senior year, we played Crossroads, and ironically, I hit it over Sharif O'Neal. But yeah, that was one of the last shots.
So it wasn't the last game. So you guys played the state championship, state playoffs afterwards, then you lost. Is that so?
Yeah, we lost in the state playoff semifinals to actually two college players at the University of Arizona. We played against Christian Coloco and Devin Airdetrieve of Birmingham High School, and that's where we lost.
So this kind of ruined it for me. I was like, man, last game he played, he hit the game winner over Sharif O'Neal to win the championship. But I forgot that's just CIF.
Yeah.
Okay. So
there's like that.
All right. So you also have the lowdown and everything LA. I have my own information, but you went to Brentwood. Brentwood is a very well-respected private school on the west side of Los Angeles. Okay, it's very close to where LeBron lives. Coached by Moose Bailey. Ryan Bailey, of course, played at UCLA. His brother, Toby Bailey, started at UCLA. Crossroads was originally where Bronny was supposed to go. He ends up going to Sierra Canyon, which is way the hell out in the valley. It's like, I don't know, with no traffic, it's 30 minutes away. Why have you heard that Bronny chose Sierra Canyon?
I think it was just from a competition standpoint. You know, I think LeBron really wanted him to be on the national stage, and I know they'd already, you know, signed up for a really, really extensive schedule playing across the country, best teams across the country, and I just really think that's what the family is most interested in, is getting Bronny to the next level and in front of people as soon as possible. You know, LeBron has said publicly that, you know, one of his main goals is being the first player to play with his son. So I think, you know, just fast tracking that to get that process started. So just putting him in front of the eyes of the people as soon as possible.
Yeah, here's my thing. So I was told that it was because, like, Crossroads, a lot like Brentwood, like legit academic private schools, right? Like legit. And I was told, this just, that, you know, it wasn't Bronny. It was they wanted a bunch of his buddies also, not just basketball, non-basketball. And Bronny has good grades. He's a smart kid. He's a good, there's no baggage to him. But that they wanted a bunch of other guys also to get into Crossroads. Crossroads is like, no, that's not what we do. Like, we just do the, like, can your kid apply? Can you get in? I'm sure there's a donation or whatever. But the flaw to that is wherever Bronny went and played would be on TV.
That's true.
And here's the other part that I don't like, and this is just me. So when I went to high school, I grew up playing with all those dudes that played at Mater Dei. Miles Simon was my best friend. He went to Mater Dei. I don't think he played varsity till his sophomore year, maybe even his junior year, he became a starter on varsity. And it's because they have just dudes, you know? And you know, in AAU, you can play with the best of the best. It's better in high school. This is my personal opinion. Better in high school to go somewhere that you can play and play right away. My freshman year, I think I should have played more, but I started a couple games on varsity. I toggled between varsity and JV. And then for the playoffs, I was on varsity. Again, you know, in hindsight, I think Tom McCluskey, my coach then, would have said I should have played him more. But the point was, like, I never would have played varsity as a freshman had I gone to Mater Dei or gone to one of the powerhouses. And then by a sophomore, I was a starting point guard. By my junior year, I was all CIF or whatever. And my senior year, I was, you know, one of the best players in the state. And I was the player of the year in Orange County. The point is that you can, I think it's a flaw in the, like, sometimes he doesn't play that much with Sierra Canyon because they're so stacked, you know?
Yeah.
And they're going to continue. They're going to continue to be stacked. And this dream team deal, you don't actually develop your all around game. Like, I would rather him go somewhere like a Crossroads and be the best player as a freshman and learn and figure out how to lift up the rest of my team. Meanwhile, when I play in AAU, all those same guys can play with you for 100 games in the summer, spring, and fall. And just your high school game, you play with some dudes that aren't as good, but you learn to be an alpha. Like, that's my personal thought in terms of growth. It's a hard thing.
I agree. I mean, I agree with your opinion. Obviously, I'm not, you know, fully involved with the situation. I don't really know everything.
Yes.
But in terms of a development standpoint, I personally agree that if he's able to do more with less from an early age, it definitely, you know, helps him from a development standpoint and gets him ready. You know, he's had a couple of good games. He had the big game against St. Vincent St. Mary's on TV, which, yeah, you know, I probably guessed that LeBron may have said something to the coaching staff about having him play more, because I think he was pretty much the MVP of the game or something like that.
Yeah, he was.
Ironically,
he was.
Against, yeah, you know, his old LeBron's alma mater.
It felt a little bit like a setup deal, didn't it?
He goes to Dallas and he barely plays.
They go to Cleveland and play against St. Vincent, St. Mary's. Now all of a sudden, like, not only is he starting and playing, but like he's getting, you know, he's balling out, and almost like dudes are taking a dive. It was really, really interesting. Okay, here's what I won't really want to get to. Okay, so what you've tried to do, and you tell me if I'm wrong, is you're trying to position yourself to be an analyst or to be a to work in the front office of an NBA team or to work in with a college team, whatever. And so in terms of research, last year you put together your own draft board, you know, and you did analysis of players. You've already done that, obviously, this year with the Big Ten and nationally as well. Let's start with the Big Ten. The league's kind of a jumbled mess, right? And there's a lot of parts to it. We know Nebraska sucks. We're very well aware. Nebraska is, you know, there's two teams we're pretty well aware are at the bottom. And then we thought Michigan State would be the best, but they've had some absolute clunkers. You know, home versus road has been different. They were awful against Purdue. They were very good against Michigan at home, et cetera, et cetera. And then the rest has kind of been a little bit here. So Northwestern and Nebraska, they stink. They're bad. The Northwestern thing is interesting. We'll get into that in a second. But you give me your sense. Like for Wisconsin, terrible in the non-conference, but some huge wins in conference, even on the road. So let's start. Who is, in your mind, is it Michigan State? Who's the best team in the Big Ten?
I would lean towards Michigan State, just towards the pedigree and the coaching, and they've got the best player in the conference, and you know you can make an argument in the country as well. I'd say they're deeper than they've been in past years. You know, Xavier Tillman's playing really, really well right now in the post, and he's hitting threes, and you know, when Aaron Henry and Gabe Brown are making shots, you know, they're really hard to guard, and as well with Rocket Watts, who's got a little Lillard in him, you know, creating his own shot. He's got a really tight handle and shooting the three. When they played Wisconsin the other day, Rocket Watts was, you know, he had a really, really good game, hit four or five threes and was just, you know, cooking outside the three-point line. So I'd probably say Michigan State, but they're beatable. You know, they've had trouble in the past with their turnovers. And, you know, sometimes you just never really know what you're going to get with them, which is, you know, sometimes it's tough to really rely on them and why, you know, sometimes they've struggled in the tournament.
Yeah, Rocket Watts is interesting because, one, unbelievable name, right? How good a name is that? Like in the name Hall of Fame, that one's like, thank you, Mom and Dad. By the way, Mark Watts is actually his name, but you know, he's fascinating to me because he, you know, here he is, a kid who was, you know, very heavily recruited, a 4-star, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Now he did have a leg injury in December. But he's a guy who I think they're going to have to, you know, this is why Michigan State, I think, has struggled to try and figure out what you have. You know, sometimes it takes you, mm-hmm. even as a coach, you're like, I need to find out what I have. And then when you don't have, you know, your full allotment of players, he's older for his grade. So that, I think that helps him. They don't have the shooting that they had last year from the wing, as, you know, Rocket Watts for the season's only shooting, I think, like 26% from three. But part of that is, in your first year, it takes a while for the game to kind of slow down. And I would guess by March, the game slows down substantially and they have a chance to achieve what preseason prognosticators thought. You know, I mean, last year was all Cassius Winston, but they also created space for him with all the personnel around him. Do you think Cassius Winston plays in the NBA, starts? What would your NBA evaluation of Cassius Winston, who's now Michigan State and the Big Ten's all-time assist leader, what would your analysis of him be?
I mean, I think he'll definitely get drafted. I mean, he's been there for 4 years. He's got a lot of points. Like you said, he's the Big Ten all-time leading assist in the country. I really like his game. I like him out of the pick and roll. I think he shoots it well enough. Yeah, I'm a fan. You know, there's something about staying for 4 years that, you know, I think teams will really respect. And, you know, he's really been there for 4 years because he wants to win. And I think that says a lot about him as a person. You know, he probably could have came out last year and gotten drafted, but he decided to come back and go and play in his senior year. But I'm a fan. Like I said, you know,
Yeah, it's tough watching him against Wisconsin because he always has really good games. But I think he'll find a role in the NBA. And you know, a lot of with some of these guys that are maybe second round picks is just finding the right organization. You know, if he finds the right organization early on, then he could be in the league for 10 to 15 years. You know, as a backup guard and maybe start sometimes. But you know, if you find a wrong organization, you know, which happens a handful of times, he could be bouncing around teams, and you know, his NBA career wouldn't go as you know as he probably planned. So
question.
Yeah, I really like his game.
So he'd have to come in. He'd have to come in as a third point guard, right? And the interesting part is a third point guard is you have to be unbelievable defensively. Unbelievable defensively. Yeah. Like he can run a team. He's not a great shooter, but he can clearly shoot and make a shot. He's a tremendous finisher. I do think that I think he'll be very good with the added space to the NBA because consider all the things, all the creative shots he makes now without the space because between the lack of shooting he has on his roster and just college basketball, it's a lot more kind of confined space, tighter spaces. I think he'll do well. My issue is, can he actually guard anybody? Because, again, all that space, everybody talks about the space offensively. And there is more space offensively. But there's also more space defensively. And so if you can't keep a guy in front, you're screwed. Now, he's tough, and that'll allow him, you know, like, just a good portion of whether or not you make it as a point guard is, hey, in the NBA, they usually switch 1 through 4. So if you switch, will you just get shoved out of the way, right? Like, will you just get, I mean, Jimmer Fredette couldn't guard anybody. Trae Young is so good offensively that it can hide the fact he doesn't guard, doesn't even attempt, and just gets shoved aside. He's gotten a little bit stronger, and he'll get better. You know, Steph, they don't switch for, but he is pretty tough, and he's so clever off the basketball. And again, I'm not comparing Cassius Winston to Steph or to Trae Young. It's actually more important for him because he isn't going to be going to average 25, going to average 10.
Yeah.
Right. So you
he doesn't have that offensive game like those guys.
Well, he won't have the minutes. He won't even get on the court can't guard. And so it's interesting. Like my advice to you in evaluation is you have to not only evaluate guys based upon, like you said, fit is totally important. But also, role in the NBA, and do they do the little things that, you know, like, there are guys that are great shooters. You're like, all right, is he a great shooter? Sure. Okay. So as an NBA, Dylan Windler, right, who's a rookie, you know, like, those guys can really shoot. But he's also, I think, 6'7". Is he tough enough to simply guard somebody? You know, will he rebound? And then can he shoot without dribbling? Because the 3-and-D guys, you got to be able to just keep a guy in front, got to be tough, got to be able to switch, contain the basketball, contain a point guard, which is almost impossible to do anyway. And then, you know, we don't have time to throw you the ball, and you're not athletic enough to go one-on-one and get your own shot. Anyway, in summation, my thoughts on Cassius are, I don't, and maybe I haven't evaluated enough in terms of, I think he's pretty good defensively, but he gets away with taking a break now because he's so needed offensively. I do think the fact he can get a bucket, I do think the fact he can pass, he's not a great passer. He's just not. It's like one of those, it's a stat accumulation because there's, but he's solid. He can deliver the ball on time and in rhythm and understand that, you know, they run a lot of horns and high ball screen and some of the stuff and some of the angles you'll run in the NBA. I think he can make a team, but I'd say he's the reason he came back is smart. He can be a legend in Michigan State. He can hold every record, maybe play another Final Four, and maybe get drafted a little higher than he should because somebody will say, well, you know, he's not great, but he's a winner, right? He's a, like the Villanova guys, they all got drafted a little higher because they're winners. And I think that's smart. I just think it's a little buyer beware because he's going to be asked, the role he'll be asked to play is like this. Hey, man, I want you to do everything you did at Michigan State, only I want you to do it in 5-minute stretches against better competition from further out. And, oh, yeah, by the way, your defense is more important than your offense now. That's a really hard thing for a kid to do. He can do it, but it's a change in how you play. All right, so after Michigan State, who do you like?
You know, from there it gets tough. You know, it's a really deep conference. And, you know, a lot of these teams just haven't been consistent enough to, you know, really cement themselves as the number two.
I would, you know, I'd probably say Maryland, just based off the roster and what they kind of bring back from a, I think, a Sweet 16 team last year. You know, they're the preseason number 7 team this year to start off, but they're, you know, they're 0-4 on the road in the Big Ten, so they're definitely struggling. You know, Anthony Cowan's probably the second best point guard after Winston, so having a guy like that who's a senior, who's been there for a while, is definitely really helpful. Jalen Smith's really good. He's probably going to be a first-round pick, you know, playing behind Fernando. He got a lot of, you know, he wasn't looked at as much, but he's you know, he's definitely a better prospect than Fernando. He's shooting it better, really physical, rebounds well. And, you know, they've got some good depth with Aaron Wiggins, who shoots it pretty well, and Eric Ayala, who could be a big X factor come tournament time, just with his ability to create offense by himself. And, you know, I really like them as well. You know, they're a tough out for sure.
You know, Iowa's an interesting team. They have a lot of injuries, so they don't have, you know, without Bohannon, they don't have the depth and maybe not the shooting from the guard. But Luka Garza is just putting up crazy numbers, right? And he's a guy who's going to have a tremendous overseas career. I like this Iowa team. Like, you know, I know they got beat by DePaul when DePaul came in early in the year. DePaul's got an older team and just shot the crap out of the basketball. But, they just beat Michigan. They beat Maryland. I mean, they beat the pants off Maryland by 20 at home. Now they got Rutgers coming up at home. What are your thoughts on Iowa?
You know, I really like Iowa. You know, I did a little bit of research on KenPom, and they actually have the second best adjusted offense efficiency in the country. So they can score with anyone. You know, if that's the team you have to face in the first round, that's a really tough prep. They scored as good as anyone in the country. They're pretty deep. You know, they have Garza, who's you know, he's got a shot to win Big Ten Player of the Year. He's averaging 23-10. He had 44-34 against Michigan. They played him twice, so he had 44 in one game, 34 in the other. But yeah, like you said, you know, their guard play isn't as good because with Bohannon out, you know, hurt his hip. But Joe Weiskamp has really picked up his game. He's averaging 15 on the year. He's one of the best shooters in the Big Ten, arguably the country. He's got some Duncan Robinson in him, I would say for sure. You know, he shoots it at a really high level.
Duncan Robinson, by the way, the perfect example of what I was talking about with can you make the league, right? A Division III player who's first, he's big, you know, he's 6'7"-ish, can shoot the shit out of it from deep. And then, you know, what's interesting is at Michigan, you know, when they made a run 2 years ago with Beilein, you know, they would take him out because they didn't think he could guard, but he's gotten at least in the NBA to where he'll just keep a guy in front and he'll just, you know, he made the NBA based upon his size, his ability to shoot the basketball. He doesn't need a long time to get it off. And then of course, you get a little bit of toughness and challenge where you keep a guy in front. And so there's a guy who, there are better athletes that didn't make the NBA, but they don't have, when you're off the bench, you're trying to make a team, you got to have that one refined skill. Can you do it at that level instead of being overall skills? Really interesting. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
He's big. I mean, he's like 6'6". And they honestly look a little similar just with actually like how, you know, how their body and face looks. But in terms of game as well, you know, I see a similar stroke. Also, CJ Frederick's been really good. With Bohannon out, he stepped coming in and he's freshman guard. He's averaging 11, leading the Big Ten in 3-point percentage. So they've got three or four legit guys who can score. The only issue has been defensively. From an offensive perspective, they're as scary as anyone in the country. So, you know, they've got a shot to win the Big Ten tournament. They've got a shot to advance far in the tournament.
All right, so we've gotten through Iowa. What about Wisconsin? What do you make of the Badgers? It's been kind of a erratic up and down year. Brad Davison, I love Brad Davison. We had him on the pod last year. Great dude. I do feel like he is kind of a measuring stick for how they're going to play, right? When they beat Maryland, he was spectacular. When they beat Penn State, he was really good. When he struggled against Illinois and he got into foul trouble, I thought that hurt him. I didn't think he played particularly well in a couple other games that they lost. You know this Badger team probably better than anybody else watching them and watching them work and working out with them. What are your thoughts on the Badgers?
They're really interesting. Very, very interesting. From a statistical standpoint, they're near the bottom in the NCAA in points per game, but they're allowing the 13th least points per game. So they defend at a really high level, but they struggle to score. And I think, you know, it's stylistic with a lot of it. They like really long offensive possessions. They like the game's low scoring. They like the grind. You know, when the game is close and both teams aren't really playing well, the game's kind of in their favor. So when games like that, you know, they can honestly beat, you know, a lot of teams in the Big Ten, you know, a lot of teams in the country. You know, there's times where they just really struggle offensively and they go through these shooting woes where they just really can't make a shot. It's tough to say what you're going to get from them every night. You know, the defense will always be there. They're always going to be scrappy. They're coached well. But, you know, just at some point against some of these high-level teams, if you can't put in the ball in the basket, it really limits, you know, your upside.
No question about it, right? Like, they do award championships to teams that score more points than their opponent, is the way I like to put it. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about a team that they beat. You mentioned Penn State, a team that started out 0-10 last year in the league, and I thought I saw some of this coming, obviously. Their first win last year was over Northwestern, was actually decent. Lamar Stevens, do you think he's an NBA player?
He's definitely got a shot. I see a little Draymond Green, you know, maybe not as, like, you know, as rah-rah and, like, you know, in the media as he is, but I think they do some similar things, just with their well-roundedness and just the way they affect the game in multiple ways. I mean, I don't know if he'll get drafted, but I see some similarities for sure.
I think the big difference between him and a Draymond Green would be, you know, can he pass the way that Draymond can pass, and can he defend? Right, like Draymond, the whole magic to Draymond is not the versatility offensively, because really he can't score. The magic to Draymond is that he is he can guard all five positions, and then he can really pass, and that hides the fact that he can't score. Then, I mean, like, look, you have all of these teams, and they're all kind of alike. We haven't even mentioned Michigan, who new coaching staff, right? But Xavier Simpson returns at point guard. John Teske, big. Obviously, and they have some returners at the wings, although, you know, they lost a lot of talent. What do you make of Michigan?
I really like Michigan. I really, really do. They've just got a lot of guys that just have seen, it seemed like they've been there for like 6 years. You know, some college teams just have guys, you're like, well, how are these guys still in college? I mean, that's how I look at Teske and Simpson. I just feel like I've watched them so much in the tournament, Big Ten, for the last 4 years. It just seems like they've been there forever. But, no, I really like Michigan. You know, they looked great in the Battle for Atlantis tournament when they beat Gonzaga. They beat UNC, who at the time was still pretty good, and now they've kind of just steamrolled. But and they struggle in the Big Ten because Livers has been out. He hurt his groin, and then they're kind of unsure of when he's coming back. And, you know, I think he was their leading scorer at the time. Teske's overtaken him now. But, you know, when you lose your first option in a league as deep as the Big Ten, you know, it's definitely hurtful.
I also think, and I'm sorry to interrupt, is – so what Livers gives them, and they're trying to get, you know, Brandon Johns to be that guy, is Livers is, he's too thick and strong for a guard to guard him. And, you know, if he plays the four, he can play all the way out to the three-point range, right? So he's really versatile. So they lose that versatility.
Yeah. They lose that, which they've struggled with. But, you know, Xavier Simpson is a really good college player. You know, he's leading the country in assists per game. His three-point shot has gotten a lot better. He still can't make free throws somehow. He's great in the pick-and-roll. You know, they love running the pick-and-roll with him and Teske, you know, skipping it to the corner for Wagner and Brooks. But they're deep. You know, they've got a good 5, 6, 7 guys that are legit college players. And, I think they definitely have a shot in the tournament.
Last thing I want to get to. Who is you mentioned that Michigan beat North Carolina. That was back when they had Cole Anthony. What are your thoughts on Cole Anthony as an NBA player?
I really like Cole Anthony. I was actually his teammate once. I played in the Pangos All-American camp. I wasn't good enough to play in that camp, but I got invited to it. And he was, you know, he's on my team. I just, the thing that I came away with was just his leadership and his personality. You know, he's a really good guy, clapping, talking to teammates, high fives, you know, just like the little things that you're kind of looking at for a point guard, just the leadership qualities. Obviously, he's super athletic. He's the most athletic kid in the building, super bouncy. And he can create as good as anyone in the country, you know, in the mid range, creating his own shots, step backs, getting to the cup. You know, obviously he hurt his foot. He takes a lot of tough shots. You know, that's kind of his thing, but he makes a lot of tough ones. I mean, he's going to be a lottery pick.
Here's the question. Did you enjoy, like, those camps, for anybody who's like the Pangos, it's just organized pickup, right? Yeah. And he has a way about him where he's definitely an alpha, but some people are not as big of fans on the way in which to play with him. It can be a little bit tough. Did you find that? Did you find mm-hmm. it was tough, or did you enjoy the experience of playing alongside him?
I enjoyed the experience. You know, sometimes in these camps, you get some of these kids who just are ball hogs and they're just kind of holding the ball and not passing at all. I thought he passed the ball really well. You know, he's looking up in the court, kick ups in the fast break. And he just, I really liked him. I think he's going to be really good. And I had no issues with him playing in the camp. He's a really nice guy. I had really good conversations with him when we were on the bench, between games and stuff. Yeah, again, I'm a fan.
Is there anybody you do not like that everybody else likes?
I don't really know about James Wiseman. You know, I did a draft board last year, so I've just started doing that as well for this upcoming draft.
Yeah.
I'm just really not sure how good he's going to be in the NBA and how he fits into this, this modern NBA.
Why is that?
But I'm very suspect on him. I don't know if he shoots it well enough for a five. You know, the teams are looking for guys who can stretch the four. You know, the big who just plays defense and catches lobs is very rare. You know, there's only a few, like, Clint Capellas and Drummonds who are, like, legit, all-star max caliber guys. So mm-hmm. aside from those few guys, teams are looking for bigs who can stretch the floor, and I don't know how well he shoots it. And there's been a lot of questions about his motor and his willingness to play and his love for the game. So, those kind of, especially that last part, that's something that you definitely don't want to hear about a player. If that ever comes up, it's definitely not a good sign. I would have liked to see him come back to Memphis and just, really show that he's got the goods and that he's a legit top five prospect. It kind of puts into a little bit of uncertainty now that we just kind of have to, we saw the three games where they played like three mid-major teams, and one of the games he had like 25 and 15, but they're playing scrubs. So it's like, we didn't really get to see you play against top competition.
It's a great point you bring up. A really good point, because it's one of those things, LaMelo has shut it down for the year. We'll see if Cole Anthony comes back. I'm with you, right? Like these, I play when I want. When you're 19 years old, that doesn't strike me as a guy who loves the game. It just doesn't. So I think it's going to be fascinating to watch. Charlie, how can people follow you on social media?
Social media. I have a Twitter. It's Charlie Wadler, Charley Wadler, Wadler. I use Twitter a lot, so that's kind of my main source of social media.
All right, dude. Listen, it's good catching up. Enjoy your second semester, and we'll talk really soon.
Great. Thank you so much for having me, Doug. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Charlie.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, that's it for All Ball. I'm Doug Gottlieb. Listen, you can listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show 3 to 6 Eastern Time or 12 to 3 Pacific Time on Fox Sports Radio, the iHeartRadio app. You can also download that podcast, or you can tweet me at Gottlieb Show. Thanks for listening. This is All Ball.